When Matt opened his eyes, he was lying in bed in the room he had rented from Lucy Perkins. He felt a slight pressure around his middle, and lifting his head from the pillow, saw that he was wearing a bandage that had been wrapped all the way around his body. For just a moment, he wondered what he was doing here, and why he was wrapped in a bandage. Then he remembered the fight he had had with two of Denby's men.
Damn.
Matt tried to get up, but when he swung his legs over the side of the bed, he felt an overwhelming wave of dizziness, and he knew that he wasn't going to be able to stand up.
Matt Jensen, what are you doing sitting up? The doctor said you were to remain flat on your back for at least 5 days. It's been only 3 days.
Three? I'd been in bed for 3 days?
Yes.
Suddenly, Matt realized that except for the bandage wrapped around his middle, he was naked, and the bandage concealed nothing.
Damn!
Matt scrambled back into bed and under the sheet so quickly that he got dizzy again.
It serves you right trying to get up by yourself, and don't worry about me seeing anything. Who do you think has been changing your bandage every day?
I'm hungry.
Well, blessed be. I've been waiting 3 days to hear you say that. You lost a lot of blood, and Dr. Purvis said I should give you beef broth to restore it. But try as I might over the last 3 days, I couldn't make you take anything except a little water. I'll get you some broth.
Forget the broth. How about a steak?
You'll like this broth. I already have some ready. It's just outside the door.
Lucy carried in a tray with a bowl, a spoon, a bottle, and glass. She put the tray on a table and moved the table closer to the bed. The broth was rich, with a very appetizing aroma, and when Matt looked at it, he saw that it was augmented with noodles.
I don't see how the noodles can hurt you, and since you haven't eaten in 3 days, you probably need something a little more substantial than just broth.
Lucy, these noodles are delicious.
I'm glad you like them. I made them myself. I learned how to cook them from my mammy.
Your mammy. That's right, John did say you were a southern lady.
Oh, and the worst kind. I'm a southern lady who married a Yankee.
She poured a glass of red wine and handed it to him.
The doctor said that red wine would help, too.
What about beer? Did he say beer would help?
I think we'll just go with the wine.
Won't you join me?
Well, I thought you would never ask.
Tell me, Mr. Meacham, what do you know of psychology?
Psychology? I've never even heard of that word. What does it mean?
It is the study of the human mind and how the mind works. Herr Wilhelm Wundt has established a laboratory in Germany and is discovering some fascinating aspects of how the mind works.
Huh. I see.
You don't see it all, do you?
No, sir. I don't reckon I do.
I bring the subject of psychology up, Mr. Meacham, because we are about to do something that will have a whole effect that is greater than its parts.
Meacham's face was still blank.
Never mind. I will explain so that even you can understand. The largest rancher around, other than myself, of course, is Ian McCann. If something were to happen that would cause McCann to cease operation, I believe it would have a great psychological effect on all the others. They would see that if the biggest among them is not safe, then neither will they be.
You want me to kill him?
No. Though I must say I am heartened by your eagerness to perform such a task, should I ask it of you. It won't be necessary to kill him, only to dishearten him.
Cutting his heart out, we'll kill him.
I meant discourage him.
Huh. Well, you're the boss. I'm willing to do whatever you want.
Leo McCann was in the bunkhouse with Curly Dobbins and Slim Toomey. Curly was playing a guitar and Slim was accompanying him with a harmonica. Suddenly, Slim lowered the harp and walked over to look through the window.
What the hell?
What is it? What do you see out there?
Lights. A lot of lights.
Lights? What, lanterns? Candles? What are you talking about?
I don't know. I'm not sure. I'm going outside to take a better look.
I'll come with you.
Leo went out onto the porch with the two men who rode for his father. He saw what Slim had seen, nearly a dozen lights. But even before he had time to wonder what he was seeing, he started wondering why he was seeing it. Each light was a burning torch carried by a horseman.
son of a bitch! It's Danby's men! They're coming up to burn us out! Boys, get your guns! They're just inside the door!
Yes, sir.
Leo grabbed a pistol from each of the holsters that were hanging from a peg, then hurried back outside and handed them to Curly and Slim. Slim got off one shot. Curly didn't even do that. A fusillade came back from the riders. Curly and Slim both went down. Leo, unhit, dived off the porch, then crawled around behind it. The riders started shooting through the windows of the main house, a couple of them taking great delight in shooting holes through the stained glass transom that was the pride of Leo's mother. Then, one by one, they rode right up to the house and tossed their burning torches, some of them through the windows, others onto the roof. Not until the house was heavily involved in flames did they turn and ride away at a gallop.
Ma! Pa!
Leo was concerned about Slim and Curly, but more concerned about his parents, who he knew to be still in the house. He started toward the house, but before he got there, he saw his mother and father come running out the front door. They hurried down the porch steps, then ran over to Leo.
Who did this? Who did this terrible thing?
I seen him. I seen all of them. It was Denby's men. Pa, I recognized a bunch of them.
Where's Curly and Slim?
They was both shot. They're laying there on the porch of the bunkhouse.
Ian hurried over to his two men and knelt beside them.
Dead! They're both dead!
What are we going to do, Pa?
Ian stood up and looked back at the house, which was now totally enveloped in flames.
Too late for the house! But we might be able to save the other buildings if I can get help here quickly enough.
You stay with Ma, I'll go get help.
E.B. Fowler had guests for dinner, and Sue had gone all out for the occasion. She baked a ham, made two pies, and had decorated the house with wildflowers. Their guests were their nearest neighbors, Ralph and Amanda Putnam, and their daughter Helen. The Putnams were farmers rather than ranchers, but Ralph had been one of the men who had gone with E.B. Fowler, Ian McCann, and the others in the unsuccessful attempt to force their way through Denby's toll gate. They had just finished their dinner and were in the parlor talking.
Do you know anything about this fella, Matt Jensen?
Why? I know he was hurt the other night at the dance. He hasn't died, has he?
No, I was in town this morning and I saw Doc Purvis. He said Jensen is coming along.
Oh, that's good. For a moment you frightened me. I thought he might have died.
Why are you so concerned about him? Do you know him?
We sort of know him. He stopped by here on his way into town the first day.
What kind of man is he?
He's very nice. Pleasant. Well-spoken.
He had lunch with us.
He may be pleasant and well-spoken, but he has been here less than 2 weeks and he's already killed two men.
Ralph, that isn't fair. Both cases were self-defense.
Yes, so they say.
Do you have any reason to doubt it?
You don't think he killed Buttram because...
Because what?
I don't know. Maybe he wanted to take Buttram's place. It would be a good way of getting it.
You mean work for Demi?
Yes.
No, he would never do that. He's taking a job with John Bryce. And you know how Bryce feels about Denby.
Yeah, I guess so.
Oh, my Lord!
What the hell?
Leo! What in heaven's name is it?
Mr. Fowler, Mr. Putnam, you gotta come. You gotta come quick.
Come where, son? You have to tell us what's going on.
Our ranch has been hit. Curly and Slim have both been shot dead.
What?
And they set fire to the ranch. Our house is burning down, Mr. Fowler. I expect it's Pert and I burnt to the ground by now.
Who would do such a thing?
It was Denby, ma'am.
You saw Denby?
No, sir. I didn't see Denby, but it was him that done it all right. Because I seen a lot of his men that I recognize. Slater, Dillon, Wilson, Carver, and that new fella he's got working for him. Meacham, I think his name is.
Pa, come out of the porch, quick! I can see a fire from here!
E.B. and the others ran out onto the front porch where they could see a red glow in the night coming from the direction of the McCann Ranch. For a moment, everyone just stood there, mesmerized by the scene. Then E.B. gathered his senses.
Come on! If we get over there in time, we might be able to save some of it! Sue, you gather all the buckets you can find. I'll hitch up the wagon.
I've got some more buckets back over at my house. I'd better go get them.
Do that! I'll meet you there. Green!
Yes, Pa?
You saddle Rhoda. No, wait. Better make it Patch. He's stronger and faster. Ride as fast as you can and go to as many farms and ranches as you can get to. Tell them what's happening and tell them to meet us at McCann's.
Yes, sir.
Which way you going first, Green?
I'll go east. Start with Mr. Bird's house.
All right, I'll go north, starting with Mr. Donovan's place.
Let's get moving.
Even before E.B. had the wagon hitched up and brought around to the front of the house, Green and Leo left, both riding at a full gallop. Sue ran out of the house carrying 6 empty buckets that she threw into the back of the wagon. No sooner was she in her seat,
yeah,
than E.B. snapped the reins against the back of the team and the wagon lurched forward. The next morning, the cool air was redolent with the smell of smoke and charred wood as the sun peeked up over the eastern horizon. More than a dozen wagons were parked in the soft morning light, and in the wagons, nestled among the quilts and blankets, slept the very young children of the families that had come to help fight the fire. By the light of day, the damage done by the fire could clearly be seen. The house had burned all the way to the ground, and was now nothing more than smoldering ashes. The stained glass transom that was one of the hallmarks of the house was now a slag of melted and discolored glass. The bodies of Dobbins and Toomey, McCann's only 2 cowboys, were lying on the porch of the bunkhouse, covered by a single sheet. The smokehouse, granary, bunkhouse, and barn had not burned because they'd been protected from the flames by the efforts of those who had come to fight the fire. Cora McCann was showing signs of exhaustion and, like everyone else, was covered with soot and smoke. She sat on the porch of the bunkhouse, holding a picture frame in her hands. The picture was of her father sitting on a chair and her mother standing behind him with her hand on his shoulder, both staring stoically at the camera. It was all she had left of them, and it was the first thing she saved.
How many were there?
There were at least 9 or 10. I didn't get a real good count.
Leo said he recognized some of them.
Yeah, it was some of the same ones we run into the day we tried to go through the toll gate. Slater, Dillon, Wilson, Bleeker.
No, it couldn't have been Bleeker. Bleeker got himself killed, remember?
Oh, you're right. It was the other one who mans the toll gate. What's his name?
Carver.
Yeah, Carver. And that new fella that Denby hired was with him. Fact is, he was leading them. I can't think of his name, but he was the fella that came to the dance and didn't do nothing but lean up against the wall the whole time and stare at people.
That would be Lucas Meacham.
Yeah, Meacham. He was with them, too.
This has gone too far. If the sheriff won't do anything, then maybe we need to go to the federal government.
What can they do? We aren't even a state. They barely know that we exist.
I know who can help.
Who?
Matt Jensen.
Why would he help? And what could he do anyway? He got himself cut up in a knife fight the night of the dance, remember? He's half dead.
Ralph saw Doc Purvis yesterday morning. Doc said Jensen was coming along just fine.
Still, he's just one man.
He doesn't have to be one man.
What do you mean?
The idea that you had the other day of all of us getting together trying to force our way through the toll gate was a good one. But it didn't go far enough. It could be that Frank Tanner was right.
What are you saying? That we should go to war against Denby?
Yeah, that's exactly what I'm saying. With someone like Matt Jensen to lead us.
Do you think he would?
Yeah, I think he would. He's working for the newspaper. And we already know that John is a fighter. Hell, I wouldn't be surprised if John hadn't invited Jensen to come for this very reason. Remember, he killed Ollie Buttram in a face-to-face gunfight, and he fought Bleeker and Carver barehanded when both of them had knives. You know how that came out. He killed Bleeker, and he ran Carver off.
Ian looked over at Cora, who was still staring at the picture she was holding. Then he looked at his 2 cowboys lying dead on the porch beside her.
All right, E.B. When we go into town to bury Curly and Slim, we'll have a talk with this Jensen fella and see what he has to say.
If anyone had asked Lucy about Matt, she could have testified that he was very much alive and very well. It was before dawn, and he was still asleep when Lucy slipped out of Matt's bed. Her clothes were lying on a chair next to the dresser, and for a moment she considered just darting down the hall to her own room naked, just as she had done a few times after a very late night bath. But there was always the chance that one of her guests might step out of his or her room, so she decided it would be safer if she put her clothes on before she left the room. As soon as she was dressed, she leaned over and kissed Matt gently on the cheek. Then felt a warmth as she recalled their time together last night. Matt stirred slightly but didn't awaken, Lucy opened the door quietly, then closed it just as quietly as she stepped out into the hall.
Ma?
Oh, are you all right?
Yes, you startled me, Zal. My goodness, the sun isn't even up yet. Well, what are you doing up so early?
Me and Jimmy's going fishing. Did you just come out of Mr. Jensen's room?
Well, yes, as a matter of fact, I did.
What were you doing in there?
That's really none of your business, Kenny. But I heard him call out. I thought maybe his wound had opened up again, so I stepped into his room to check on him.
Oh, yeah, I didn't think of that. Is he all right? Do you need me to stay home from fishing?
No need for you to stay home. Mr. Jensen is fine. He's sound asleep. He must have been dreaming or something. Where are you going?
Brewer's Pond. Jimmy said there's lots of perch there. Maybe I can catch enough for you to have fried fish for supper. Do you think Mr. Jensen likes fried fish?
I'm sure he does, honey. You run along now and have a good time.
E.B., Sue, and Green were returning to their own house after spending the entire night fighting the fire at the McCann Ranch. All three were in the wagon, though Patch, the horse Green had ridden to arouse the other farmers and ranchers, was tied onto the back. The morning sun beat down upon the wagon, giving back both heat and the distinct smell of weathered wood. Sue was beside E.B., her head nodding as she dozed where she sat. Green had stretched out in the back of the wagon and was sound asleep. Even E.B. was experiencing long periods of time when his eyes were closed, but the team knew the way back home and they plodded along. Suddenly, three men appeared in the road in front of the wagon, causing the team to stop abruptly. A rapid stop jerked both E.B. and Sue awake. E.B. recognized all three of them as being Denby's men, but he could only recall the names of two of them, Meacham and Slater.
Well, now look what we have here. A nice little farmer's family out for a morning ride. What are you doing out on the road so early, farmer?
I'm a rancher, not a farmer.
Hey, Slater, Wilson, you think having a couple of milk cows makes a man a rancher? You didn't answer my question, farmer. What are you doing out on the road so early?
Not that it's any of your business, but we spent the night helping Mr. McCann fight the fire at his ranch.
Oh, McCann have a fire over at his place, did he?
Come to think of it, you sorry son of a bitch, I suppose it is your business, since you're the one who set the fire and killed his two riders.
I don't appreciate being called a son of a bitch.
Is that a fact? Well, I'm sure that Mr. McCann didn't appreciate having his house burned down either. Now get out of my way.
We're not going anywhere until you pay the toll.
What are you talking about? I've paid the damn toll every time we've gone into Fullerton. There's no toll gate here. I'm going home now, and I'll be damned if I pay the toll to go back to my own house.
By now, Green was awake, and he was on his knees behind his mother and father.
What's going on, Pa?
Nothing is going on.
E.B. directed his attention back to Meacham and the other two men.
Get off the road. Get out of my way.
Now, mister.
His name is Fowler. E.B. Fowler. He lives about a mile and a half south of here.
I see. Now, Mr. Fowler, you know as well as I do how this is going to turn out. No matter how much you argue with me, it's all going to end the same way. You're going to pay me $2. One for you, one for your wife. I won't charge you anything for the boy. When you do that, I'll let you through.
Get out of the way.
I'll tell you what. Just to show you the kind of generous man I am, I won't even charge you for your wife. I'll just charge you $1.
Look, Meacham, I don't have any money with me, so I couldn't pay you $1 even if I wanted to. We left home in the middle of the night to fight a fire, not to go into town to go shopping.
That's all right. We can work something out. That is, if that pretty little wife of yours is willing to cooperate.
What are you talking about?
Well, now, come on, Mr. Fowler. I'm sure you've been around. You've seen ways women have of making money. There are three of us here. If your woman plays her cards right, you'll not only get your toll paid, why, you can even come away with $1 or $2.
Shut your mouth, you filthy son of a bitch. On second thought, I'll shut it for you.
E.B. reached down and grabbed a shotgun under the seat. He hoped to hit Meacham, but Meacham had managed to dodge out of the way just in time. The load of buckshot caught Slater in the chest. He fell from his horse. Meacham's bullet hit E.B. in the middle of his forehead, knocking him over the seat and into the back of the wagon. He lay there with a black oozing hole in his forehead, and his eyes open but unseeing.
You killed him!
I didn't have no choice! He killed Slater and he would have killed me if he could.
It wasn't until then that Sue saw three or four little wounds on Meacham's face. Though he'd escaped the bulk of the shot, a few on the periphery of the shot pattern had hit him in the cheek, and he was now bleeding from the wounds. He took out a handkerchief and began dabbing the small punctures.
Meacham! Slater is dead! I know the son of a bitch is dead. I'm here too, you know.
Meacham glared at Sue as he continued to dab at the wounds on his face. Finally, he waved his hand.
Go on. Get out of here.
Green crawled over into the seat and picked up the reins.
Yeah! Yeah!
Hiding behind a berm that surrounded Brewer's Pond and butted up against the road where the shooting had just taken place, Kenny Perkins and Jimmy Smith had seen the whole thing.
You get back down here and be quiet. You want to get us both killed?
But did you see what he did?
I saw it.
What are we going to do about Slater?
Throw his carcass over the back of his horse. We'll take him back to the ranch and let Denby do whatever he wants with him.
You mean Lord Denby, don't you?
Wilson dismounted, then struggling some because Meacham offered no help, he draped Slater's body across the horse.
Let's go!
Go where?
Back into town! Mr. Jensen told me to keep him informed about things. I believe this is something he'll want to hear about.
Matt went to work to the newspaper office that morning.
Matt, good morning. How are you feeling?
Fully recovered.
Good, good. You'd be surprised at how many people have stopped by to ask about you. You got here just in time. I'm doing another editorial about Denby, and I'm going to send this one straight to the governor.
Have you sent any of your previous articles to the governor? What are you laughing about?
He sent every article he's ever written about Denby to the governor.
And the governor's never responded?
Well, not yet.
My husband, the eternal optimist.
Mr. Jensen! Mr. Bryce! It was awful! You should have seen it!
What? What are you talking about?
Meacham killed Mr. Fowler!
Oh my God, are you sure?
Yes, ma'am, we seen the whole thing.
What happened?
Jimmy told a story of the encounter.
And E.B. killed Slater?
Yes, sir. He pulled his shotgun out from under a seat and shot Slater. Then Meacham shot him.
It's going to be another case of justifiable homicide, isn't it? The sheriff isn't going to do a thing about it.
3 days later, a joint funeral was held for E.B. Fowler, Curly Dobbins, and Slim Toomey. Reverend Landers offered to do a separate funeral service for E.B., but Sue said that the three men had died on the same day, fighting the same evil, and she thought E.B. would be proud to be buried with Dobbins and Toomey. Every farmer and rancher in the valley came into Fullerton for the funeral, and there were so many that the church couldn't hold them all. As a result, the funeral was held outside on the church grounds. After the funeral and the interment, everyone returned to the church grounds where they had dinner and expressed their condolences, not only to Sue and Green for their loss, but also to the McCanns for the loss of their friends and the loss of their house. Marshal Tipton was present for the funeral and the meal and claimed he could do nothing, as Fowler had fired first. And Curly and Slim had been killed at McCann's ranch outside the city limits. Meanwhile, the Fowler ranch had visitors.
You sure there's nobody here?
Nobody. They all went into town for the funeral.
Burn it!
Two men lit a couple of torches and threw them onto the shake roof. Within moments, the Fowler house was on fire. The same thing was happening at the Bird, Donovan, Killian, Jennings, and Putnam houses. By 2 o'clock that afternoon, while all the valley farmers and ranchers were in town, their houses had been burned to the ground. Meacham carried the report back to Denby.
Excellent. Excellent work.
My lord, are you saying that every house of every farmer and rancher in the entire valley has been burned?
Indeed, Mr. Tolliver. Upon my orders.
But why, sir? Why would you do such a horrible thing?
Careful, Tolliver. Remember your place.
But, my lord...
Tolliver! Your family has been in service to my family for over 100 years. I would think that such a long relationship would have inculcated some loyalty. I am not used to, nor will I accept, having my actions criticized, or even questioned, by an inferior.
Yes, my lord.
However, because of that long relationship, I will share my reasoning with you. It is my intention to build a great fiefdom, incorporating all the small ranches and farms in the valley. In exchange for rebuilding all the houses, I will demand title to the land. They can continue to live there, but all of them will be working for me.
You would make serfs of them?
Exactly.
But, my lord, there is no serfdom society in America.
Maybe it's time we established one. After all, it works very well in England. Why wouldn't it work here? And if you think about it, I am really doing all these people a favor. They would be much better off serving me. No more worry about crop failures or cattle dying. You do see that, don't you, Mr. Tolliver?
Yes, my lord.
In Fullerton, Dennis Donovan was helping some of the women clean up from the dinner after the funeral. He had just put a box of dishes into the back of his buckboard when he saw someone that he recognized as a Denby rider approaching. He went out to meet him.
What are you doing here? Did you come to gloat over killing three of our men and burning Ian McCann's house down?
Nah. I need to talk to Matt Jensen.
Now, what do you need to talk to him for?
Please. It's important.
All right, come on. I'll take you to him. He's in the church.
Matt, John Bryce, Kurt Jennings, and several others, including both the mayor and Marshal Tipton, had been engaged in conversation, still trying to decide the best way to handle Denby.
Matt, this here fella wants to talk to you, but you better watch out, because though I don't know his name, I do know that he rides for Denby.
Rode for Denby. Not anymore. Mr. Jensen, my name is Caleb Jenkins. I don't know whether or not you remember me. We met on that night that you, on the night that Butram got himself killed.
Yeah, I remember you. What can I do for you?
I don't know how to tell you this.
How about you just come out and say it?
I want you to know. I want you all to know. I didn't have nothing to do with it. And when I heard what all Meacham and the others done, what Denby had them do, well, I just couldn't take it no more. I decided I needed to get out of there. But before I leave, I figure I owe it to all of you to tell you what happened.
Get on with it, Jenkins. What are you talking about? What happened?
Your house has been burned down, Donovan. That's what happened.
What? You son of a bitch!
I didn't have nothing to do with it. I told you that.
Let him talk, Dennis. I have a feeling there's more.
Yes, sir, there's more. There's lots more. It ain't only this feller's house that's been burned.
Who else's house did they burn?
They burned your house, too.
Mine? Well, how do you know my house was burned? You don't even know who I am, do you?
No, sir. But it don't matter none that I don't know your name. I know your house was burned because all of them was.
What? Are you saying all the houses were burned?
Yes, sir, that's what I'm saying, all right. Denby knowed that all you would be in town for the funeral, so he told Meacham to take some men and burn down every house in the valley. So that's just exactly what Meacham done.
The news spread quickly around the grounds.
The sheriff for sure will have to act now. No, he won't. You know Hightower as well as I do, and you know that cowardly son of a bitch will find some reason not to do anything.
Well, I'm not going to stand around palavering about it. I'm going to go out and check my own house.
No, don't do that.
What do you mean, don't do that? Don't you understand? It's my house.
I know it's your house. And I know that all of you are probably anxious to go check on your homes, but I'm going to ask you to trust me for a while. I want you to stay in town, find some place for your wives and children to be for the night.
What do you mean, stay in town for the night? How do we know you're not in cahoots with Denby? He burned our houses while we were in town. Who knows what he might do next?
Jennings, do you really think Matt is in alliance with Denby?
I don't know. I don't know anything about him.
Have you seen Butram around lately?
Butram? No, he's dead.
Wait a minute. You're the one who killed him, aren't you?
That's right. He's the one that killed him.
All right. Maybe you aren't in cahoots with Denby. But why do you say we should stay in town for the night?
Because I think it's time we did something about Denby once and for all. I want everyone to meet me in front of Ma Perkins' boarding house in an hour.
What do you have in mind? Are you going to plead our case to the sheriff?
No, we aren't going to need the sheriff for this. We're going to take care of it ourselves.
What do you mean, take care of it ourselves?
Just what it sounds like. For those of you who are willing to do it, we're going to take the fight to Denby.
Now you're talking. Yes, sir, taking the fight to that son of a bitch is what we should have done a long time ago.
Ma Perkins boarding house, 1 hour from now. And find some place for the women and children to spend the night.
May I have your attention for a moment? If any of you are unable to find shelter for the night, you are welcome to stay in the church.
Thank you, Parson.
John, come with me.
Matt and John walk quickly away from the church grounds.
Matt, I'm all for this taking care of it ourselves, but I can't help but wonder what happens afterward. There have been vigilante groups before in the Dakota Territory, and the governor has not looked upon them all that favorably. As a matter of fact, he hanged the leader of a vigilante group just 6 months ago.
We won't be vigilantes.
What will we be?
We'll be the posse of a United States deputy marshal.
Well, how?
Matt took a star from his shirt pocket and showed it to John.
I didn't know exactly what I was getting into by coming up here. So when I came through Denver, I stopped to see a U.S. Marshal friend of mine and got myself deputized.
One hour later, Matt stood on the front porch of the boarding house looking out over those who had answered his call. Lucy had Mrs. Black make a lot of coffee, and now she and Millie Bryce were passing out coffee to the men who were gathered on her front lawn.
Gentlemen, I trust that all of you have found a place of shelter for the night. I want you to get a good night's sleep, because tomorrow morning, we're going out to Prestonshire to arrest Denby, Meacham, Wilson, Carver, and anyone else who we find that was involved in killing Curly and Slim and burning the houses.
What do you mean we're going to arrest them? How are we going to do that? Not even Tipton can do that.
That's because Tipton is a city marshal, and we, that is all of you who will raise your right hand to be deputized, will be deputy U.S. marshals. Our authority has no boundaries.
Deputy U.S. marshals? Who are we going to get to deputize us?
Once again, Matt took the star from his pocket, but this time he didn't return it. This time he pinned it onto his shirt.
Raise your right hands, repeat after me. I do solemnly swear.
I do solemnly swear.
That I will faithfully execute all lawful orders given to me.
That I will faithfully execute all lawful orders given me.
By the Deputy U.S. Marshal in charge of this posse.
By the Deputy U.S. Marshal in charge of this posse.
All right. We'll meet here again tomorrow morning at 8 o'clock.
Present at the meeting, but not participating, was Marshal Tipton. When the meeting broke up, he stepped up onto the porch to talk to Matt.
Are you really a U.S. Marshal?
I'm a deputy U.S. Marshal.
Why didn't you come tell me that as soon as you came into town?
I believe that it was to my advantage to keep it secret until necessary for me to show the badge.
You have no intention of arresting Denby, do you? You plan to take your army out there and kill him, don't you?
It's not true, Tipton. I have every intention of arresting him.
What if he won't let himself be arrested?
Then it may be that I will have to kill him. Either way, he's collected his last toll, burned his last house, and killed his last man.
When Tolliver heard the pull bell ring late at night, he got out of bed, put on his house coat, lit a candle, and then walked through the house to the front door. Opening the door, he was surprised to see Marshal Tipton.
Marshal Tipton? Isn't it a little late to be calling, sir? Lord Denby has already retired for the night.
Wake him up, Tolliver. This is important.
I don't know, sir. He can be quite irritable when disturbed after he has gone to bed.
Better to be irritated than dead, isn't it? Wake him up.
Very well, sir. Come with me. You can wait in the parlor.
Tipton was sitting in a leather chair, staring at the points of light atop each candle when Denby came in.
Mr. Tipton, I trust that you have a very good reason for disturbing me in my slumber.
Tipton rose from his seat.
Is saving your life important enough?
What are you talking about?
Did you burn all the houses in the valley today?
Are you going to try and claim some jurisdiction over that now?
No, but the ranchers and farmers whose houses you burned are planning on coming out here after you tomorrow.
Let them come. They'll be nothing but a disorganized mob. My men will dispatch them quite easily.
They aren't disorganized. They're being led by Matt Jensen.
Jensen is leading them?
Yeah.
Well, what are you doing out here? If you know about this, why don't you stop it? You certainly have jurisdiction over them. A vigilante mob is against the law, isn't it? Even in a place as bereft of civilization as the Dakota Territory?
I don't have jurisdiction.
What do you mean you have no jurisdiction? They are in town, aren't they?
I don't have jurisdiction because they aren't a vigilante mob. They're a deputy U.S. Marshal's posse. As it happens, Matt Jensen is a deputy U.S. Marshal, which means his authority supersedes mine.
I see. When is this supposed to happen?
They'll gather at 8 o'clock in the morning, then come out here. I'd say you need to be ready for them by no later than 8:45.
Thank you, Mr. Tipton. I'll be prepared for them.
Well, I'd better get back to town.
Yes, you do that. No, wait a minute. It might be best if you don't go back to town at all.
Why not?
They are going to gather at 8 in the morning, you say?
That's their plan.
Forewarned is forearmed. I am not going to wait out here for them. I am going to take the battle to them. I will be coming into town tomorrow with 20 men. We will strike as they are organizing. They won't know what hit them, and the battle will be over before it even started. You need to be out of town when that happens, just so there is no question as to where your loyalties lie.
Yeah. Yeah, I guess maybe you're right. I think I'll ride on down to Ellendale tonight to have a talk with the sheriff about the situation here in the valley.
Tolliver had stood just outside in the parlor listening to Tipton and Denby talk, then did the same as Meacham was brought in. Half an hour after Meacham left, Toller had opened the door slightly to Denby's room. He could tell by the heavy and rhythmic breathing that Denby was asleep. Not until then did Tolliver go out to the barn, where in the dark, because he didn't want to take a chance of anyone seeing a light, he saddled a horse and rode away into the night. There was no one manning the tollgate, so Tolliver was able to pass through without arousing any interest or concern as to what he was doing out on the road this late. It was after 11 when he reached town. As he rode down Monroe, he began having second thoughts. What exactly did he have planned?
I have nothing planned.
Then, seeing that the only lit-up building in the entire town was the saloon, he rode to it. Tolliver tied off his horse and stepped inside. The saloon wasn't entirely filled at this hour of the night, though there were more people than he would have imagined. Looking around, he saw several faces he could recognize, though no one he could call by name. It was Dennis Donovan who saw him first.
I'll be damned.
What?
Ain't that the guy who works for Denby? His servant or something?
Yeah, I think it is.
Donovan got up and walked over to Tolliver.
What are you doing here, mister?
I am looking for Mr. Jensen.
Did you expect to find him here?
I was hoping he might be here, or that someone here might help me find him.
You ain't welcome here, mister. You need to go on back to Denby where you belong.
Please, sir, if you would direct me to Mr. Jensen, I would be most grateful.
The only thing I'm going to do for you is direct your ass out of here, and if you don't leave now, I'll mop up the floor with you.
Strike me if you must, sir. But after you finish, please, I must speak with Mr. Jensen.
Tolliver closed his eyes to accept whatever blows Donovan intended to deliver.
Oh, wait a minute, Dennis. If he's willing to take a beating, maybe he has a good reason for wanting to see Jensen.
Paul, do you know where Jensen stays?
Yeah, he has a room at the boarding house.
I thought maybe he did, but I wasn't sure. All right, come with me. I'll take you to Jensen.
When Denby and 20 of his men approached Fullerton at 8:30 the next morning, they expected to arrive in town by surprise, then ride up to the boarding house where they would catch the valley farmers and ranchers by surprise. But the surprise was theirs, for they saw, stretched out across the road in front of them and extending for several feet to either side, an obstruction that would deny passage to their horses. Behind the crossed and sharpened log battlements was a barricade constructed of boxes, barrels, and logs. Protruding over the top of the barricade were a dozen or more rifles.
Whoa! Whoa! What the hell? What is that?
It is nothing you need to worry about.
Well, don't look like nothing to me.
Me neither.
Forward, men! Don't weaken now!
Forward into that? Are you crazy?
I have gone to great lengths to recruit only the most skilled gunmen in the territory. Are you telling me now that you are afraid to go against a bunch of farmers and small ranchers? At the first shot, they will run.
Nah, I don't think so. I was at Shiloh. Wasn't nobody there but farmers and such, and they didn't run. I'm getting out of here.
No, you ain't.
Meacham pulled his gun and pointed it at Wilson.
You watch me.
Wilson turned his horse to ride away. Meacham's bullet caught Wilson in the back, just between his shoulder blades, and it exited from his chest. Wilson fell from his horse, dead before he hit the ground.
To hell with this! I'd rather take a bullet in the back than spend my life in jail! Yeah!
The other men riding with Denby broke into a gallop as well, running away.
Yellow-bellied sons of bitches!
Meacham raised his pistol to fire again.
No, Meacham! No need to do that! Killing them won't bring them back to us!
Denby dismounted. Meacham did the same. They continued to stare toward the fortifications that had been erected overnight. Matt Jensen appeared then, climbing over the barricade, dropping to the ground, and walking to the two men.
Give it up, Denby. I'll see that the two of you get a fair trial.
Very good, Jensen. Very good. But I thought you were coming after me. How did you know we would be coming after you?
Tolliver appeared then, standing on top of the barricade.
I'm afraid I told them, Lord.
You! Mr. Tolliver! You would betray the trust that has existed between our families for over 100 years?
I am not betraying that trust, my lord. Your own family charged me with the responsibility of seeing that you did nothing to disgrace the Denby name. I'm afraid I have been remiss in that duty, but there came a time when I could not let this go any further.
At that moment, and quite unexpectedly, Jimmy Smith came riding up the road behind Denby and Meacham. Jimmy was carrying a string of fish he had caught that morning. Because he had spent the night camped out on Brewer's Pond, he had no idea of the events that had transpired in town during his brief absence.
What's going on?
Jimmy, go back!
Hey!
Moving quickly, Meacham jumped behind Jimmy's horse, then pulled the boy down. Wrapping his left arm around Jimmy's neck, Meacham managed to keep Jimmy between him and Matt. Meacham's right hand held his pistol against the side of Jimmy's head.
Well now, Mr. Jensen, it would seem that there has been a change in our situation.
What do you say, Jensen? Are you gonna ask me to let the kid go? Are you gonna try to convince me that the kid has nothing to do with this?
Matt glared at Meacham but said nothing.
Undo your gun belt. Let it fall to the ground.
Matt continued to glare at Meacham. He made no move to comply with Meacham's demand.
Do it!
To emphasize his order, Meacham pulled the hammer back on the pistol he was holding against Jimmy's head. Slowly, deliberately, Matt unbuckled his gun belt and let it fall. By now, everyone who had taken up arms behind the barricade was standing on top, watching the drama unfold before them.
Now what? As you can see, you aren't going anywhere. Your men have left you. Your time is over.
Oh, I think not. These people have no homes to return to. I will provide them with homes, bigger and better than the ones they had before. I think we will be able to establish a relationship that is beneficial to us all. Of course, in order to assure that nirvana, I am going to have to take you out of the picture.
Oh? Just how do you plan to do that?
By engaging you in an affair of honor.
What are you talking about?
We're going to have a duel, you and I, Mr. Jensen.
Walking back to his horse, Denby reached into his saddlebag. He removed a wooden box and opened it. He pulled out two dueling pistols and began loading them.
When I say duel, that is exactly what I mean. Not the kind of crass gunmanship by which you bested Mr. Buttram. This will be a gentleman's duel, fought with the weapon of a gentleman. A single-shot, beautifully balanced pistol.
He held both of them out by the barrel, presenting the butts toward Matt.
To show you that I have engaged in no chicanery in the charging of the pistols, you may choose whichever one you wish.
Matt pointed to one of the pistols.
Very good.
Denby handed the pistol to Matt.
Now, since this is an affair of honor, we shall require seconds. Mr. Bryce, I take it you are there, somewhere among those standing on the barricade?
I'm here.
You will be Mr. Jensen's second. Mr. Tolliver, you will be my second.
What does a second do?
As seconds, it should have been we who loaded the weapons, and, according to that same code, we should try and arrange some accommodation between the parties that would prevent the duel from occurring in the first place.
Very good, Mr. Tolliver. You know the code duello. But then I was certain that you would. However, do not be concerned if all the niceties aren't observed. You see, a duel is between two gentlemen of equal birth. Mr. Jensen, being a commoner, should not even be afforded this honor. However, I am a man of magnanimity, so I am extending him this privilege.
Matt looked at the pistol in his hand as if it were something foreign and incomprehensible.
Mr. Jensen, you seem uncomfortable with your weapon. Would you rather use your own Colt?
Yeah.
I'm sure you would. But I intend to make a gentleman of you if it kills you. If it kills you!
Are you planning on talking all day?
No. The only thing left to say is to explain the rules to you. We will stand back to back. Then we will walk off 10 paces. Mr. Meacham shall count the paces. Upon the count of 10, we will both turn and fire. Then, after you are killed, Mr. Meacham will maintain custody of the boy until we are safely out of here.
Suppose I don't want to do this.
I'm going to kill you, Mr. Jensen, one way or the other. At least this way, you will have a chance. Not much of a chance, to be sure, but you will have a chance. Now, shall we proceed?
Matt and Denby stood back to back, holding their right arms crooked so that the pistols were pointing straight up.
Mr. Meacham, if you would, please, begin your count.
1, 2, 3.
Matt and Denby paced away from each other, the distance between them opening appreciably.
6, 7, 8, 9.
At the count of 10, both men turned. Denby pointed his gun toward Matt. He fired, but Matt suddenly dropped to one knee so that the heavy ball shot harmlessly by his head. Matt aimed not at Denby, but at Meacham, who, while watching the duel, had presented more of himself than before. The .58-caliber ball hit Meacham in his right eye, then burst through the back of his head, carrying with it blood, bone, and brain detritus. Denby, who was also wearing a pistol, drew his gun and aimed it at Matt, but before he could pull the trigger, Denby was struck in the chest. He clasped his hand over the wound, then pulled it away and watched as his blood filled the palm. Looking toward the man who had fired the shot, he saw Tolliver holding a smoking pistol.
It's too brute!
Denby was dead before he hit the ground. One week later, Matt Jensen stood in front of the newspaper office. Spirit was saddled and ready to go. John, Millie, Lucy, Kenny, and Jimmy were with him.
As the new owner of Prestonshire, Mr. Tolliver has removed the toll gate and has promised to rebuild every house that was burned.
It's obvious that Tolliver is a decent man. A lucky break that he's the one who inherited the ranch.
More than just a lucky break. It's a matter of family inheritance. Turns out that Tolliver and Denby shared the same father. And though he could not pass on his name or title, the old man did see to it that Tolliver was in the will if anything happened to Denby.
I wonder if Tolliver knew that when he shot Denby.
Doesn't matter. The killing was obviously justified, and the result is positive for everyone. Especially for me.
Matt, will we ever hear from you again?
Oh, come on, folks. He needs to get started. Goodbye, Matt.
John, there's no need to rush it.
John stopped Millie with a pointed glance toward Lucy.
Oh, yes. Well, come along, Kenny, Jimmy. Let them say goodbye in private.
Lucy waited until John and the others had disappeared back into the newspaper office.
What I should have said, I suppose, is, will I never hear from you again?
Never is a mighty long time, Lucy.
It wouldn't work, you know.
Matt didn't have to ask what wouldn't work.
I have businesses to run, a son to raise, and I can't see you playing checkers with Mr. Proffer.
He wouldn't play with me anyway. I cheat, remember?
Yes, I remember. And speaking of remembering, thank you, Matt. You have given me memories that will last a lifetime.
Lucy, I...
No. Please. Just get on your horse and go now while I still have my composure.
Matt swung into the saddle and looked down at her. She wasn't crying, though he could see a glistening of tears in her eyes.
It wouldn't work. But oh, isn't it lovely to contemplate?
Before Matt could answer, Lucy turned away from him.
Let's go, Spirit.
Matt started the long ride to Ellendale. He saw clouds building up in the west. No doubt, there would be rain. Matt Jensen, The Last Mountain Man, Dakota Ambush is a Graphic Audio production. Copyright 2011, William W. Johnstone. Production copyright 2012, The Cutting Corporation, all rights reserved. Published by arrangement with Kensington Publishing Corporation, all rights reserved. Performed by Terrence Aselford, Thomas Penny, Tim Getman, Thomas Keegan, Christopher Sheeran, Richard Rowan, Michael John Casey, Joe Brack, Mort Shelby, James Konacek, Yasmin Toison, Christopher Graybill, Dylan Lynch, Stephen Carpenter, Eva Wilhelm, Kimberly Gilbert, Eric Messner, David Coyne, Johann Detweiler, Tim Carlin, Colleen Delaney, Gregory Gorton, Danny Gavigan, Ren Casey, Elizabeth Jernigan, Drew Copas, Gary Tells, Ken Jackson, Tim Pabone, Jeff Allen, Michael Glenn, Bobby Aselford, James Lewis, Bradley Smith, Nathaniel Perry, and Nanette Savard. Additional Boot Hill Boys by The Dead Giveaways. Directed by Rose Elizabeth Supan. Produced by Rick Rowan and Dwayne Beeman. Executive producers James Cutting, Mary Cutting, and Angie Cornett. Dialogue editing and graphic audio sound design by Allison Thomas. Matt Jensen theme by Johann Detweiler. Book adapted for graphic audio by Dwayne Beeman. If you enjoyed Dakota Ambush, read the Pinnacle Edition. Visit www.kensingtonbooks.com. And be sure to look for William W. Johnstone's The First Mountain Man, The Last Gunfighter, and Smoke Jensen series, as well as Elmer Kelton's The Wolf and the Buffalo. All available in graphic audio at Road Stops Everywhere at 1-800-670-5220 or at www.graphicaudio.net, where you'll find samples of all our Action Pump titles, as well as free downloads and podcasts. Now keep listening for exciting previews of other titles in graphic audio.
Graphic Audio presents R.A. Salvatore's masterpiece, The Saga of the First King. 1,000 years before the Demon War, the Abelican Church is beginning its rise over the dark and brutal Samhaist religion. But the rise is not without its battles. In the midst of this turmoil, there is tension between the Lairds of Haunts and rumors that a king is rising to rule them all. All the while, the people of Haunts are being slaughtered by the brutal encroachment of the hated, powering enemy. Only one man can usher forth justice for the people of Haunts. But his rise to power is cloaked in mystery and deceit. He is the Shadow of Haunts, the Masked Man, the giver and taker. Some call him wretched and evil, while others say righteous and just. He is the Highwayman. Be the first to hear the beginning of the epic new saga from fantasy master R.A. Salvatore, the Highwayman. Available now in graphic audio.
If you can't find that graphic audio title you're looking for, go to www.graphicaudio.net, where you can order it in CD format or digital download. If you're on the road, call 1-800-670-5220. That's 1-800-670-5220. Or www.graphicaudio.net. And if you're looking for a great way to try out a different graphic audio series, check out our convenient and easy-to-store long-haul box sets, which contain up to 5 books of a series. Available only at www.graphicaudio.net. Be sure to sign up for our monthly newsletter or follow us on Twitter.